Welcome to GWC podcast number 305. Today is January 7th, 2012. In this episode, we rewatch and analyze an 80s time travel classic, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Party on, dudes. But first, your hosts, three unrepentant sci-fi geeks. I'm Chuck Cage.
And one day you end up a big evil, you know, crap ass.
And with me, Audra Heston.
If I had a nickel for every time I got boned at the Eye of Jupiter.
And Sean O'Hara.
I shall fart confusion.
Our mission? Enjoy new science fiction, fantasy, and other cool stuff every week and share the experience with you. Oh yeah, and have some fun in the process. GWC is brought to you largely by the generosity of listeners like you. It's your donations that keep us going. For more information on how to donate, visit galacticwatercooler.com/support. And the fine folks at audible.com. Visit www.audiblepodcast.com/watercooler for your free audiobook. Of course, we'd love to hear your opinions, too. So if you have something to say, or hey, you could introduce us to something new, don't just holler at your MP3 player. Give us a call at 214-296-9229. That's 214-296-9229, extension 701, and leave us a voicemail for inclusion in a future show. Better yet, you can join the GWC community, a group widely recognized as the friendliest people in sci-fi, and watching, reading, and enjoying all kinds of cool stuff 24/7 over on galacticwatercooler.com, our website, blog, and forum. GWC is a spoiler-free podcast, and we define spoilers as definitive information regarding material not yet released in the United States or its country of origin. In short, if it's out, it's fair game. Cindy Miss High School Football Rules!
When in doubt. It'd be great to have like a political speech, you know.
Somebody
like screws up and they're like, they don't get the response they want, and they're just like, "Go West Virginia!"
That works. That works in every situation except for like Penn State right now.
Right.
That would not be cool.
That's gotta suck.
I was just thinking.
You're applying for a job at your first law firm. Oh, where'd you come from?
Exactly. It used to be awesome. Now you're like, no.
It'll take like a year.
Where are you from? Alabama.
It'll take like a year for the stink to wear off that way.
Damn.
You got to get enough ozone going through that one to wear away the skunk smell. Yeah.
I still think that's a great ending for any like thing that's not working out. I should do that. Like anytime something's not working out and going badly, I'll just be like,
"City for high school football rules."
Just for the hell of it, you know.
Anybody over the age of 30 will get it, you know.
Everybody else like, what? So if you haven't figured it out yet, or from the title where you downloaded the podcast, we are talking about, a little later in the podcast, we're talking about
Wild Stallions.
Indeed.
Most excellent.
Yeah. Gonna be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That's a suburb of LA, right? I'm assuming.
I don't know.
San Dimas.
Oh yeah. I'm guessing.
I remember
like
growing up there are so
pretty sure
many
it's not
movies.
In Nebraska.
Well they shot most of it in Phoenix, I think. So
really?
Did they really?
That's what IMDb says, yeah.
Oh. Well, I remember there were so many movies I watched growing up that took place in all of these Southern California cities. Like, even shows like Full House, when you're a kid, you watch it, and it takes place in Burbank. And
yeah.
You know, and you get used to the California life being portrayed as kind of the norm, you know?
Yeah.
Like, California suburbs, L.A.
You
suburbs.
You're so right. You're so right.
What?
No, just that's it. You watch on TV, and you think
yeah.
that
America,
standard suburban
yeah.
life is L.A.
Which...
Is not.
Not so much. Yeah.
Well, no, I'm talking about, well, yes, that's true. But I was actually talking about other things. Like you see, like in the movie Clueless, when you see them in the high school, and the high school has all these outdoor hallways and stuff. I remember growing up and thinking, that's what a normal high school is. My high school's weird. You know, like I'm freaky because I live in this rural area with this, you know, 1919 square three-story building that I go to school in. And that is what the norm is. That's what everyone else goes to.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and all over the country, everyone's going to, you know, different. They've all got their own stuff, but you just get used to seeing the same thing portrayed on TV and you expect, well, that's what it should be. You know?
Everywhere cool looks like Southern California. Yeah.
Actually, you know what I always think of? And I was thinking about it right before you said that. Like when we're talking about the, I was thinking the high school, IMDb says the high school was in, was some Phoenix high school. And I was thinking they didn't show an exterior shot. And then I thought of an exterior shot. The ones that struck me were, I think was it the Manhattan Project? Yeah, the movie with the, oh crap.
The one where he built the bomb?
There was another one. No, there was another movie like that. And I can't remember. Yeah, but they spent a lot of time outdoors and it was just like, you're right. It was like Clueless now that I think about it, you know, it was like these buildings connected by, you know, overhang.
Oh yeah. You know, like outdoor hallways or like in,
with walkways, you know, yeah. Covered walkways between buildings and outdoor eating areas.
Atriums
and stuff. Yeah. And,
right.
Yeah. Which you just, in Texas, it would be nuclear and up where you were, it would be frozen.
Right.
You just can't do that. You know,
here it'd be Death Valley and with her, you'd be ice skating
or you'd be blown away or, you know, the rain would come sideways through it or something, you know.
I still remember this one year in April, it got up to 55 degrees and I was like in fourth grade and they took us all out, all the classes brought all of the kids outside for recess because it got up to 55, and I remember sitting on the swing set and taking my jacket off and being like, this is awesome.
By the way, San Dimas is east of LA, just north of Pomona.
Okay, all right.
So yeah,
all right.
No, but you're right.
But it looks like Phoenix.
There are so many things. And you know, we were joking about this on Save Eureka the other night, because like everything, Eureka is supposed to be in
Oregon, somewhere in Oregon.
You know, it's of course it's Vancouver.
Yeah.
You know, like everything on sci-fi and almost anything these days is Vancouver. It's the same thing. Like you start to think that reality is like Vancouver.
Yeah.
You know, like they always show those. You know, hilly areas with trees and these
towering
like,
firs and pines.
Yeah, and like these really cool urban areas where like you have streets that are urban, but they're kind of wide, and they have these buildings with apartments in them that are like really interesting and modern and everything. You know what I'm saying? That's Vancouver. That is not Dallas. Dallas, you have crappy apartments that look like every other crappy apartment. Identical little boxes, you know, like placed out in the middle of nowhere with nothing around them except empty space, you know?
Dallas as a city has kind of an unusual history. Like, whereas a lot of cities have an urban center, Dallas, it's kind of building up, but Dallas has the center of it kind of vacated. So it's more like a donut hole in the middle, you know, where everyone tried to spread out.
Oh, it's a hole. All right.
and left nothing downtown. Right? And now like the only stuff going on downtown is mostly for tourists, you know?
Yeah. It really kind of, it's sort of like an accretion or disk or something like that, where you just sort of, you know, you can see the stuff around it, but you don't want to be in the center because everything just kind of gets drawn there. That's crappy. You know, so it's the outer rings of Dallas are probably where you want to be.
It's crazy. Yeah. Dallas is awful that way.
I was talking to this guy I work with the other day who plays like classical guitar and stuff. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to Houston tonight to play a gig. And I'm like, Houston? Geez. I'm like, you better get on the road, you know? And
start moving.
I know. It was like noon. He's like, yeah, I got a gig at like 7 in Houston. I'm like, dude, drive. Don't talk to me.
Why are you here instead of talking to me? 4.5 hours. He's got time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway, he was
not during rush.
Good point.
He was like, you know, he's like, I play all these gigs. I play in Houston. I play in Austin. And he's like, I can find almost no place in Dallas that wants a live classical guitarist, you know?
Fort Worth.
They keep saying that people don't want the live music. They want, you know.
It's because the live music blows here.
Well, I know this is getting off topic a little bit, but I think that Dallas is, you know, has a need for more music, more arts, more theater, more arts.
Yeah,
because
there's none of that here.
Yeah, it's true.
There's some in Fort Worth.
We've got some. Yeah. We've got like tiny little communities here and there.
When a place like Tulsa is known more for arts than Dallas, that's wrong.
Yeah.
That's just wrong.
Fort Worth actually has a great artistic community, which is basically the sister city of Dallas. I mean, because it's called Dallas Fort Worth down here, but Fort Worth is actually the cultural and art center of this area. Dallas has almost nothing.
The only problem with Fort Worth's like arts scene is
business
that
industry.
It's all owned by the Bass family.
It's all owned by the same people. Yeah.
So it's essentially the Bass family arts program.
No, it is. It is.
Which is cool because it's better than nothing, but it's not cool because it's all what they want and nothing else.
Because they own the cops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the
that's not even an exaggeration. They do.
The fake little queen area downtown that you go in and it's like
it's all owned by the family de Medici. I mean Bass.
It is.
I got kicked out of there for wearing my normal attire.
I'm not surprised.
Kicked out of where?
Downtown
what? Fort Worth.
No.
I was escorted in a black and white taxi to the edge of the nice.
They allow black on their taxis? Sorry.
No. No, they don't. I was in a red and blue sirened taxi, and they escorted me for wearing no sleeves in my boots. And I had a rip in my knee. That's it.
My only experience was we were playing down there a lot, and one time we were walking along, and a guy came over, a panhandler came over and asked for money, and one of the, quote, cops, they're not cops.
One of the bicycle cops?
Yeah.
One of the guys that looks just like a cop,
goons.
But is actually, because it's actually private property down there. That's the way they did it, is that whole area is private property, so
they can enforce codes that are not normally enforceable.
Came over and grabbed the guy and like took him away.
Yeah.
And I'm like, whoa.
Yeah, that's Bass Family Guido.
That freaked me out. Wow. I was just like, look, I'm not a big fan
I would have given him a buck. I mean.
I wouldn't have. But, you know, I don't feel like we needed to like haul him off either, you know.
Yeah.
Damn, that's
you could have been like,
that's messed up.
Like, sir, I'm sorry. You know, you got to move on or something.
Yeah. And, like I would in Dallas. Except I wouldn't be going to anything interesting. Anyway.
For those of you global, that's a little bit of DFW for you.
All the listeners in Southern California are like, you guys are a bunch of hicks.
Knowing is half the battle.
Yeah, exactly. There's a reason California ain't in Texas, let's just say.
You guys want to do some news?
News!
And now,
Galactic
Water Cooler!
Oh my God, we got new BBC Sherlock. Oh.
Have you seen it?
No.
Ah.
Yeah, you need to see it.
Well, he doesn't live in England, so how would he have seen it?
Oh yeah, good point.
That's true.
So,
how was England?
It was great.
just Sherlock this was morning, on. And boy, are my arms tired.
Exactly. My quick visit.
consisted of the airtime of Sherlock.
It did. But it was...
nothing but Heathrow.
Holy crap. I could not have imagined. I'm not going to spoil anything, so don't start fast-forwarding or anything. I promise. But I got to tell you, I didn't think it could necessarily get better. I was hoping if it had been as good, I would have been completely happy. It may have gotten better.
Yeah, and I need to watch it again because 90 uninterrupted minutes of that kind of complexity, my brain was a little fuzzy and tired, and I was like, what'd he say? Who's that guy?
And finally, difficult when you're watching Sherlock Holmes.
If I take the time to answer you, I will miss something too.
It's true. I know.
I won't spoil, but there are parts of it that Sean would really appreciate too.
Yes, I've heard about those.
Already, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I got a text in the middle of the night. Holy crap, dude. You gotta see this. It's gonna be crazy.
From who? Like Bishop Montana or something? Yeah.
You lucky bastards. Yeah. You don't have to wing your way over for an hour and a half
sure.
to watch.
I'm watching this live and you need to see this.
That's not bad. That's not bad.
Yeah, I get a lot of that stuff. Like when, Warehouse 13 and in the HG and Micah rope. Twining incident,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You found out about it as they were taking the picture.
Oh, yeah, but my phone lit up. They're like, holy crap, dude, are you watching this? I'm like, yeah, this is awesome. Yeah. So, yeah, there's a lot of that going on. But, yeah, I've heard good things about the Sherlockage.
It was a great Sherlock Holmes story. I just want to say, I think this might be the best show on TV. It is, and I know it's limited. They only do them three at a time.
It's like film quality.
It is. Everything about it is scary good. It's sort of like House when you look at it. It's ironic because they're both based on Sherlock Holmes. That you have,
right.
But what makes House so crazy is the fact that crazy good is the fact that everything is good. Like you get shows where the writing is good or the cinematography is good or the acting is good or the cast ensemble is good or, you know, some piece of it is good, right? If you get one or two of those, it's a beautiful thing and it's a great show. house, they get all of them. You know, here, they get all of them. It's incredible.
I realized that the guy playing Sherlock, who has the most awesome British, the most Britishy name you can ever imagine in real life, Benedict Cumberbatch.
It is, isn't it?
All,
can you imagine him more?
Super hot. And I realized as we were watching last night, he has a weak chin. And I still find him
actually
incredibly
not,
hot.
Not that much.
Bit of a weak chin. Not like
Zach.
Zach Brown.
Yeah. Oh, wait. I forget that I have the rig. And I have the rig here.
As
I can
he fumbles.
Actually, yeah, well,
that's a good question,
a
Senator.
Zach Braff! Thank you.
It's not that weak, but it's on the weak side. And he's not very built. He's kind of a skinny guy, but he's so smart. It's like, oh, that's super hot.
One of the themes in the show this time, actually.
Yeah, it's addressed.
I like the line that smart is the new sexy. Mm-hmm. That's not a spoiler. Mm-hmm. I think that's true.
And it is.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Brains get the ladies going.
Holy crap.
Especially the geek ladies.
I'm screwed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, whatever, art boy. Go over, sit in your corner and draw something. You know.
Hey, creative and artistic talent counts as brains.
Yeah, it does.
I beg to differ, man.
Not that I'm hitting on it.
The reason I'm excited about the whole Sherlock stuff and that kind of genre is because it brings steampunk to the front, and I am a big fan of cleavage.
Yeah, you know,
there you go.
And of course the BBC one isn't.
Yeah.
But, you know, Audra and I were talking about that. Actually, we were talking about this morning. It was that, wasn't it? But we actually talked about this once before, too. The, you know, that it does seem like the... especially the you know, what everybody likes to call the Iron Man Sherlock, right?
Yeah.
You know, is definitely steampunky.
Yeah. There's a lot of that in Sanctuary too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
There's a lot of stuff that is bringing that. I guess that's becoming, I say that. I mean, it's been probably 5 years, right? That it's really,
it's
been
working
picking
up to it.
Yeah.
It's more mainstream now than it really used to be.
Yeah.
For the last couple years. And
well, let's just say that right before Halloween, when I was putting together the Ramona Flowers costume, I was looking for the goggles that she wears. Yeah. And, I was looking around online, and when I typed in goggles on Amazon, it came up with all of these suggested searches and like thousands of hits for stuff like steampunk goggles and steampunk glasses. And, you know, like the word steampunk has kind of entered the mainstream a lot more.
Between, and which is going to piss all the steampunk people off,
yeah,
which is great. I love that because they're a little, they, classic,
it can be elitist.
Yeah, classic, yeah. Steampunk is a little elitish.
And, do you remember, Audra, when we went, this, you'll appreciate this. Do you remember when we went to, we went down to the Maker Faire in Austin, we went to the pre-meeting for it, the organizational meeting, and there were like these four people at that party that were like big steampunk people.
Yeah, sure.
And they were,
that was like 2005.
And they were elitist bastards.
Yeah.
They were. You remember?
Those are those people. Those are the guys who wear little wire-rimmed glasses and smoke a pipe and stuff and don't talk to anyone who they don't perceive to be in their intellectual circle. And
yeah, it's kind of funny because there is nothing that will destroy and piss those people off more than having steampunk become mainstream.
You know what would be awesome?
Yes.
Twilight steampunk.
Awesome!
We should push to mix
glitter
and monocles.
Did you see the meme that was going around that was awesome? It was like the Edward, and he's like,
oh, yeah.
Could have spent, you know, many lifetimes curing cancer, instead went to high school a billion times.
Yeah. Yeah.
Seduced a 17-year-old girl.
Yeah, that's
what a waste
funny.
Of immortality.
I'm not anti at all, but I think that's funny.
It's true.
Oh, yeah.
When you think about it.
Can you think about, would you actually go to high school over and over again if you had a million? That's like the last thing in the universe I would want to do over and over again.
Oh, yeah. Well, they explain a little bit of that in the story, but it
you
is
think
ridiculous.
The teachers would start to recognize
it.
Him, you know?
Well, that's why they move around a lot.
Right.
You know, they have to.
I've been to every high school in the country.
And he's not in any yearbooks. I mean, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's that guy. You know how they have the standard photo for the photo not available?
Yeah, he's that
it's
guy.
Edward. He's like the guy.
His face is in picture frames that you buy in the store.
That's right. See, that would make sense.
You know?
Nice.
Everybody thinks it's
everybody. I've seen that guy. He looks so familiar.
I don't know, man. He's just,
you know. But,
the one that you like, you want someone to think that you have a boyfriend, so you like leave it in the frame and you.
Crap. That's funny. But, I've always wanted, Audra and I talked about, you know, everybody sends out the family Christmas cards. That's like the family posing in some awkward, horrible thing.
Send out some other people.
Oh yeah. For years we've thought about doing that, like sending out just like other people randomly each year.
You know? I always thought it'd be funny to do a parody. Like, you know how sometimes people would send out the ones about, they're like, well, you know, Sally's in 11th grade this year and she's going to be going on to Harvard. And they're all these kind of like, you know, thinly veiled attempts to show how great their kids are doing.
I didn't do crap. My kid's flunking out.
No, I thought it'd be awesome to have one like, okay, you know, Merry Christmas from me and Chuck or whatever. And then it has like two different people that we don't know on the, like, you know, a black couple
a
or something.
Photo card.
Yeah. And then in the back, it'd just be like, we're doing awesome. You suck. You
know? the best one I saw was probably Dawn A.Z.'s. She had like
hers
the family
cool.
timeline to let you know what was going on, you know, with her family and everything.
That's cool, though.
And
that would be really cool.
That was the perfect family one because it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't any of those stereotypes.
Look how successful we are. Look how much hair my husband has. Look how big my boobs are, you know. I mean, that's
which, by the way, my husband's hair is.
I hired someone to fix.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of, the reason we don't do family Christmas cards is because who the hell would believe it if they knew me? You know, I mean, oh, whatever, that picture can't exist. Even if it was a great picture or something like that, if it was a Christmas card to people who knew me,
right,
they would just assume that it's fake.
That's what we ought to do, is we ought to take a picture and then have Sean, like,
mess
overdo
you up.
It. Oh, yeah. Like,
oh my God.
Like, literally make it so over the
have
top
make
that
it,
it's obvious.
Make us look like action figures.
Yeah. Supermodel action figures. With little stars in your eyes.
I mean, just completely over the top, you know, like stupid.
Make your teeth shine.
Put like 5 feet of flowing blonde hair on me.
Fabio, like, waving in the wind. Chuck, like, Captain Morganing over a rock, you know.
With Data sitting there next to his crotch.
Exactly.
The other one that I've...
That's for you, one.
Nice. The other one that I always thought would be funny would be to have the other family and then have, like, a portal in the background with us, like, giving everybody the finger out of it. That'd be pretty good, too. You know?
Yeah, see, that kind of
stuff like
is...
photobombing someone else's Christmas
yeah, exactly. Like, you know, an orange portal on the wall behind it with us, like, sticking out of it going...
Our family sucks, so we thought we'd borrow yours.
A blue one on the other side with, like, our foot sticking out of it.
Actually, that'd be the back of the card would be, like, our house with, like, a blue portal on the wall and our asses sticking out of it. See, now that's good. That's
Merry Christmas, Chuck and Audra.
I might do that next year.
Thought we'd ass up your new year.
And an assy new year. Yeah. So yeah, new Sherlock.
new Sherlock. Yeah.
But you were getting ready to say something else too, right?
About Sherlock?
No,
he wouldn't say
no,
anything.
About,
Sean doesn't have any news.
Nah, I don't remember.
Yeah. That's
whatever you were talking about for you.
What happened to your Santa hat? Speaking of
next
portraits.
Year, the Santa hat is coming back.
Yeah, I didn't wear my
I'm going to buy like 12
year.
Of them.
Why?
I was so happy this year. I didn't need the Santa hat. It was cool. You know,
that's saying something.
I was.
The
awesome.
Santa hat. The Santa hat expresses happiness.
I know, but I...
dare you express happiness in a way uncomfortable to me?
The last couple of years, I've been using it as kind of my reminder that holidays can be good, you know, and this year...
I should
really
be one of those. Maybe I need 10 of them.
That's awesome.
I had a really great holiday, you know? It was, you know, like most people, holidays are like super stressful and their family drives them insane and all that kind of stuff. My family's actually pretty calming, especially... You know, when you get them in the same house, it's weird because we're all picking on each other and all that stuff, but it's kind of what we do.
Yeah, it's in a fun way.
But it's in a fun way and everything like that. You know, normally, and honestly, this is what he does all the time. Buona takes the hit. And we all pick on Buona.
Yeah. Well, he dishes it out the entire rest of the year.
Yeah, and he takes it. During the holidays, and right. you just beat on Buona all the time, and it's great. Yeah, you know, sharp jab, barb, you know, and
finish him
exactly. And it's kind of become holidays, and it was super non stressful, so I didn't have to wear the hat, but I will next year. It will be good. But,
you know, you're saying how the hat was kind of a reminder for you. I saw something the other day online that I got to thank Geeky Chick. Because I, what was it? Oh, I was looking at her Twitter stream because sometimes people will say interesting things that I have missed, and I'll just go to their tweets and read them real quick to catch up on what's going on. And she had this twit pic of something that I don't know if she created it or just posted it, but it said, "I am one workout away from a good mood." And I read that.
Oh, that's so true.
And I was like, holy crap, that is motivational.
Anybody who thinks you don't get addicted to the endorphin rush, bull.
Well, you know, there have been so many times where I wanted to get up and go to the gym. I was just like, you know, and it's hard to make yourself go. And you find all these reasons not to go. But I saw that and I was like, she's right. You know, it's like you almost can't be in a bad mood when you get done because it just, you know, it's a really good feeling. And I did. I read that thing and I got up and went right to the gym. So thanks to Geeky Chick.
Yeah.
It's like The Rock.
You can do it. Get out there and do your stuff.
All like, his tweets are like that. It's awesome.
You're like, The Rock told me I could do this.
Yeah. Yeah. The Rock believes in me.
That's awesome, by the way.
I do have a small bit of video game news.
Oh, oops, I'm slow again. Damn it.
Thank you, Senator. I'm glad you asked that question.
It's now. It's time for
WANA sponsored video game news.
Okay, so we've probably mentioned this on the cast before, but March 6th, Mass Effect 3 comes out. It is coming out. It's they've got multiplayer in this one. They've got all kinds of stuff. This is the conclusion to the Shepard story. There's only going to be three, from everything that BioWare says. So this is going to be it. And it's supposed to be the doozy and the
doozy.
Yeah, it is. It's
watch your step. That one's a doozy.
Yeah. This one is where they conclude all the stuff that you've been doing, all those saved games, all those characters that you've met and been nice to, even though you didn't want to, all the people you've pissed off, all that stuff is going to come out and be useful in this game.
I hope Captain Anderson ends up in like a mansion on the hill with a hot tub and
several naked blue Asari and everything is all good for him. I
like
hope
that
he
MC
gets that
MC Hammer video where he's wearing the banana hammock and all the chicks are like writhing.
Oh, God.
I hope
MC
Captain
Hammer
Anderson gets
trying so hard to be something that he is absolutely
so
not. Yeah. You know?
I'm wearing this banana hammock for God, you know?
This little
banana hammock for God. That should be a band
name. His little,
like,
shaved lines on the side of his head and his little kind of cross eyes, you know? Like, yeah. I'm doing the hammock thrust.
On so many levels.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but it's coming out March 6th. I had to break down because Shooter is an evil man.
Did you pre-order?
I did.
Nice.
I did.
Did you get some kind of Amazon credit or something? Or?
Well, yeah, I had an Amazon gift card Christmas. So other than my camera and everything like that, I looked at it and I'm like, oh God, it's $79. I'm not doing $79 for a collector's edition. No, well, it's the collector's edition. So you get the book with it and extra stuff and some everything. I'm like, I'm just not doing that. Screw it. I'm going to be good. And I made the mistake. I should have stayed strong. I made the mistake of tweeting about it. And I'm like, you know, I didn't mind the $59. I really didn't. I'll pay the $59 to get Mass Effect on the day it comes out. It's not a big deal. And then Shooter was like, hey, and sent me a $10 Amazon gift card. Nice. So he's like, I know you. I'll get you halfway and you'll spend the rest. I'm like, damn it. And I had to. I did. He was right, too. He's like, not only did I make you do it, I made you spend an extra $10 more than you wanted to. My work here is done, you know? And so I did. I ordered the collector's edition, pre-ordered the collector's edition Mass Effect stuff. So Amazon has that quote-unquote low price. If you're a GameStop guy, GameStop gives you more kind of trinkets with it. You'll probably get some more downloadable content and everything, as they always do with GameStop. You know, there's always a redeem code. Amazon has the book, the lithograph, all the collector stuff and the special assault rifle, and they give you the low price guarantee, which is the, you know, if it appears or the price lowers anywhere or something like that, they'll refund you the difference.
Yeah, I'm
look
still
in
gonna
Finland,
do that.
It's only
yeah, it's 8 cents cheaper. They'll do that.
So I had a fun experience. I was in a shop last week, and they were just being complete assholes. You know that they had a square. I'm not going to name the place because they don't deserve the press, but. There was a square checkout area. You know, and they had people on three corners of it. And no matter where you stood, they were always like, no, go stand over there. It's the other place. And after like 10 minutes of waiting in line to buy this book.
And other people just kept walking up to the counter and getting checked out.
Yeah.
And
I pulled out my, I'm like, hey, look, you know, I just want to buy the, they're like, yeah, go stand over there.
It wasn't a bookstore, by the way.
I pulled out my phone. It was not a
bookstore. They had books.
But. Found the book on Amazon.
Ordered it.
Ordered it. Dropped the book and left.
Yeah.
I'm like, screw you. You know, you're competing with somebody that can actually do business. Yeah. So
in all the retail goodness for all the folks out there who haven't yet discovered Amazon.
That's some Chuck, by the way. For yeah.
Big Mike.
Big the
Mike.
Buy More. Yeah, it's pretty much what it is. You know,
I need to get a fish like Mike, like Big Mike has
for, fish?
For his office wall.
No, not Amazon fish, got a fish. Really.
You wanted to sing?
I wanted to sing, yeah. Take me to the river.
I think I had one of those at one point.
Oh, my God. When I was doing my I'm sorry, but when I was doing my study abroad, when I was in college, I was traveling, like the campus was outside of Rome, and I was traveling with someone up to Germany. And on the way back, we came through Verona, Italy, this small town. The train just stopped through there. And we had like this didn't usually happen, but we had like a layover for like an hour and a half. So my friend and I went walking around this town, right? And it's Verona, like in Shakespeare and where Romeo and Juliet lived and everything.
Yeah.
And we found this little alleyway, and there's a balcony up in the alleyway, and everyone calls it Juliet's balcony. And from floor to like, it was kind of like a stone building, and it was an alleyway that kind of dead ended, and the balcony was on one side of it. And maybe like three stories up on all corners, all sides of this wall, covered in every centimeter of stone, was graffiti from people all over the world saying, you know, so-and-so loves so-and-so and hearts and everything. And, you know, on the underside of the ceiling, and there's this like everywhere. And there's a little gift shop right there by Juliet's balcony. And it was called Juliet's Balcony Gift Shop, you know, and you go in. And I was just like, this is amazing. I never knew about this place. How cool. And you go in, and I was like, I wonder what kind of awesome, like,
Romeo,
you know,
and Juliet.
With Romeo and Juliet or like Shakespeare
sell.
Stuff or whatever. No. It was like a mini mart. And they were selling a whole bunch of those fish on boards that move their head back and forth and sing. And they had this fish singing Bad to the Bone. And this guitar, you know, it was like the original recording. It was
and
like
Juliet's balcony.
And the fish comes out, and its little lips are like, bad. And I was like, this is surreal.
I couldn't make this crap up.
I know.
I thought that story was going to end very differently.
Nope.
This sort of like, I've only been out of the country twice. Once was to Mexico. The other was to Amsterdam. And
I didn't know you'd been to Amsterdam.
Oh, yeah.
When?
I was 19.
Well, that's a bad idea.
What, with friends?
Yeah.
I never knew
that's
that.
That's just a bad idea on like 50 different levels.
Oh, it was a fun 2 days. Well, I guess, no, that's not true. I was 20.
I thought you were going to say, no, that's not true. It was 10 days. Whatever.
Oh,
and on that note,
yeah.
I have another piece of news that I should have brought up earlier because it ties right in. The awesome Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah.
I can't even say that without that is you're right. That is the most. I don't know if you guys saw it, but there was news that came out last week that he has signed on for a role in the next Star Trek sequel.
I heard that.
No, that's awesome. Yeah, the new movie.
No word on what he's playing yet, but that's pretty exciting. And
whatever it is, it's hot.
And also, Noel Clark, Mickey from Doctor Who.
Oh, yeah.
Is playing a role
and
as
Ricky.
Well. Yeah, right. is playing a role as well.
The
so,
Mixter.
Yeah, apparently, Brits showing in force in the new Trek.
Sweet.
They'll be bad guys. They always put the Brits as bad guys.
He's yeah, totally right.
It's got
except in George Lucas.
I was going to say, it's got offset Star Wars.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, somebody's got to...
That's true. Star Wars always makes, like, the British and Americans are always good guys, like, and anyone with any other accent is bad.
I like Brian Cox's view on that, because back on Top Gear, you know, Clarkson asking, why do you think they always get, you know, Americans always cast British as bad guys? And Brian Cox was like, you know, I think intelligence scares them.
Well, yeah.
Well, yeah. So, yeah, it was kind of funny. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think it should be cool. I have one more video game recommendation. We were talking about Amazon cards. One of the other Amazon card purchases I made was I purchased Batman Arkham City.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I heard a lot about that.
Cool. Yeah. I've heard good things.
Yeah. It's basically if for those of like four of you and Buona who don't know what Batman Arkham City is about, it's very much like the Assassin's Creed stuff. In fact, you know, you're parkouring all over, you know, in this case, Arkham City.
I miss my game.
There's, you know, you're Batman, you're doing all kinds of cool stuff, and there's stealthing, there's killing people, there's doing all kinds of stuff.
It's Wait, there's stealthing? You hate stealthing.
It is, but for some reason, with Batman, I'm okay with that, because you just wander around going, I'm Batman. You know, nobody's supposed to see me, I'm Batman, you know, which is kind of cool. And you go down and you bust people's heads together.
Yeah.
You know, so you go down and beat people up and then, you know, grapple hook up the ceiling and off you go. But the best thing about Batman Gotham or Arkham City, the best thing about it, two best things actually.
Is that R. Kelly won't sing about it?
The three best things about one is Harley Quinn.
Oh, yeah.
The stripper assistant of Joker.
I just made a motion.
Completely a very R. Kelly-ish motion.
Use your imagination.
Think Dave Chappelle.
Yes.
The woman on the witness stand.
I have such an urge to sing a song, the Dave Chappelle song. I'm going to pee on you.
And you did.
Yeah, I did. I had to. But Harley Quinn is awesome. But you get to play as Catwoman if you do the DLC.
Cool.
Nice.
And Catwoman in Arkham City is awesome. You just jump off buildings and she just jumps and does this somersault. And then you have her whip, use her whip. And then she swings sort of like Spider-Man from building to building.
Nice.
It is awesome. She can grab and do stuff or grab buildings, the side of buildings and like climb up them. She can climb upside down. It is.
She can huck up a hairball.
Man. And the models for it are great, but she has the best. Scott and I spent probably 4 hours yesterday while we were watching Bill and Ted just making Catwoman climb strange places. I mean, it was really awesome. So if you're, I don't even like sneaking games normally. I love this game. It's really cool.
Nice.
Look, she's underneath the deep fryer at Burger King.
No, you do. Yeah. You're like, I wonder if Catwoman can climb there.
I never want to see.
Oh, you're climbing through all kinds of sewers and all that stuff with Batman and stuff. But no, Catwoman, it's all aerial. She's above everything. She can grab onto anything. It's awesome.
I have one last, it's not really news, but one last thing that I wanted to throw in here if I could. We Audra and I actually saw Thor this last week, finally.
Wow.
We had been,
late to it. Yeah, it took us a long time.
Hey, I saw
Heat. That's funny.
Hey, you know that Johnny Mnemonic?
Yeah. Yeah, great film, no.
It's a great movie.
Yeah, I know. A lot of things had come up, and we just didn't get around to seeing it. And, you know, it's funny because I had read no Thor comics. I knew nothing about other than, you know, some basic mythology and Stargate, right? Nothing about
buddy.
Thor. Yeah, exactly. I kept thinking that. Thor, buddy. But
I love the way the mythology worked into it. That was cool.
I think this was one that, you know, some things in comics work better in comics because they require the imagination, you know? I mean, it's a rainbow bridge. Come on, you know? And yet, I think it was brilliant that they managed to pull this off with, you know, Audra had said that she thought, she thought that this was the best Marvel comic movie other than the first Iron Man.
Now, I haven't seen The Incredible Hulk. That's the only one I haven't seen.
But, I have. It's good, but it's
yeah,
not.
I think the first Iron Man was the best, and then in my opinion, Thor. And I know we talked about this on F this week, and everyone kind of threw in on it, and not everyone agrees with me.
But of course not. And it's reasonable, but I was shocked.
I enjoyed the hell out of Thor. I went into it with, I think, slightly lowered expectations. The costuming really kind of threw me at first until I saw it in the context. And right. It really worked. That and Natalie Portman was in it, and that wins the movie for me anyway.
I'm with you. I work.
Except for Wing. Apparently, he's not a huge Natalie Portman fan. But there's there was a lot of excellent attempts to make things work.
And yeah.
I really appreciate it.
You know?
It. Yeah.
I bought in, and I was really I was happy. You know, I felt like they made the things that could have been a little cheesy, just uncheesy enough that I was happy to accept them. And once I did, I had a great time with that movie.
Yeah.
You know, other than the magic and the mythology and all that, what really sold this movie for me, and I don't mean it in just the shallowest way, but what really sold this movie for me was Chris Hemsworth. Like, there's this scene when he's sitting in this little small town diner and he drinks what I think is coffee. And he takes the mug and he goes, "That was delicious. I want another." And smashes it on the floor. And Natalie Portman's character, Jane, says, "Hey, you can't do that, you know?" And
You liked the coffee.
You liked the coffee. And she said, well, why didn't you just say, you could just say so. And he looks at her and he's like, "I just did.
I meant no offense."
Well, but when he says, "I just did," the way he grins and stuff, that's to me kind of like the perfect example of how he plays this role. Completely confident, completely at home, at ease with himself. And that just comes through the whole movie. When he's talking about the rainbow bridge, that's why it's not cheesy.
Yeah, you're
because
right.
Because you believe him.
I'm with you.
You believe that that's important to
you're
his
like,
family.
I ain't telling that guy that that's cheesy.
I require a horse.
And he is just...
All we have are like cats and
he's
dogs.
He's mesmerizing, you know? I mean, obviously he's amazing to look at, but just the way he plays that part, he's just so in it and he's so good. You just really like him. And to see his kind of downfall from arrogance and finding his humility and everything, it's, man, I just loved it.
Plus, who would have ever thought, let's plug
kind of
Kenneth Branagh
story.
Into Marvel Comics. That just sounds like a disaster waiting to happen. And yet,
Works.
You know?
I was thoroughly surprised on how, you know, is it the best movie ever? No, of course not. But
it was
a lot of fun. It's not even the best Marvel movie, but it was a lot of fun. I think it was better than people give it credit for.
Yeah, agreed.
I still would argue that the costumes are a little hokey. But
I thought Natalie Portman was underutilized. They could have done a lot more with her, I thought.
I thought they could have done a lot more with her. But she was very, I mean, she was more believable as a scientist than Christmas Jones ever was.
Oh, come on. Yeah, she was completely believable.
That and the fact that Natalie Portman is very intelligent.
Yeah.
Has several degrees.
You can see. Yeah.
I mean, she's not stupid.
I mean, she brought something to that role, but almost anyone could have played it. You know,
I think they
should have used her talents a little bit more.
I was really hoping for more in that universe, which is very unusual for a Marvel movie. Normally in Marvel, you're like, okay, I saw that. We're good. All right. Honest. No. You don't need to make another one. We're good. Let's just move on. This one, I'd like to see more.
Yeah.
I really would.
I thought the guy who played Loki did a really good job.
Loki. And if you think about it, Loki's kind of tough because he has to be kind of scary and he has to do evil stuff.
Yeah.
But he's a trickster and a
right.
So anyway, he has to be. Yeah.
So he has to have that edge. You know, you go too far
creepy.
One way and you get the freaking Riddler.
Right.
You go too far the other way and you get, you know, Hannibal Lecter. And you have to ride that line with Loki.
Well said.
And it's a tough role to play.
Well, he did it.
Yeah.
And like he said, the trickster, he's not necessary. He's not a pure villain. He's not evil. He's chaos.
Yeah.
And he does evil things, but not everything he does is pure evil. And that's his whole point, is to turn things upside down and to make trouble, essentially.
Yeah.
And then the Norse mythology system says that is always present. And there has to be one force of chaos because there's no such thing as a world without it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's necessary. It has to be there. And it was really a well-played deal. It had the same kind of hallmarks of any Norse mythology, you know, like the king goes to sleep and you find out later that the king did all this on purpose just so that his son would grow up some. And this is the only way he could think to do it. And again, people had to suffer so that his son could learn a lesson.
Wow. When he denies Loki at the end, when Loki's like, "Father, you know, I did this all for you." And he just looks at him and says, "No," and kind of shakes his head sadly or whatever. And you see Loki like devastated, and you can feel that. I mean, it's like Satan being expelled in Paradise Lost or something. You know, you
that's
just
where the Branagh pays off.
Yeah.
Those scenes, you buy them. Nobody has more experience making those scenes than him, you know?
I mean, it really worked. Like I said, I can see where people would have problems with it. But really, I think if you kind of let loose a little bit, it's a great movie and it's a lot of fun. And I appreciated it. It was well done.
For what it's worth, I suspect you're going to get what you want, because I think that this suffered very much from the same problem that plagued Iron Man 2, which is that it's too close to the Avengers movie. Yeah,
and everybody's expecting that.
And everything sort of has to plug into the Avengers movie. And you know, I really feel like both movies were underutilized is the right word. They underutilized the main character in the movie because they're aiming toward Avengers.
Yeah.
I think that Iron Man 3, they're already saying, is not an Avengers story. It's an Iron Man story. And I think it's going to be good, you know? And I think, you know, they're going to do another Thor. You can't not. It did well.
I hope they do. I really do, because I liked Thor.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like the Hulk they've had to restart, because it's actually hard to tell a Hulk story. Thor, if done correctly, and I think they have the formula now.
Oh, yeah.
You could do Thor stories, and they would sell, because I think people would like them.
I think there will be another one. I don't think you can walk away from something that made money like that, that has, you know, a future. It's just too easy. They're going to do it, you know?
They reviewed it, or we reviewed it on Legends, and, you know, the biggest problem I think that Thor had against something like Iron Man is, there is to drive the vehicle, you have to have, to Iron Man success. They took one of the greatest modern actors in Hollywood and said, okay, you know, we're going to give you a role that we know you can play. He's more talented than many of the people who would take those leading roles, and they made it work. Chris, he doesn't have that kind of talent, but he fits Thor. You know what I mean? I don't think he's in the same caliber as a.
I'm with you.
I feel like I wouldn't be able to judge his talent yet, but as far as his skill and experience, he's a lot less experienced than Robert Downey Jr.
See that?
This sure.
So the very first movie Chris Hemsworth was ever in was Star Trek.
Yeah.
So, you know, but as far as talent, which I see as kind of a natural ability, I don't know if I could measure that.
Except that I agree with you. Except that in this case, we're talking about the movie, not him, and how it affects the movie. So it's now.
Yeah.
And now he's lacking that experience. And I take his point.
Yeah. Right, Even though he doesn't have that same kind of.
He may be big.
He may be. And he may be.
It won't be in time for Thor 2.
But it won't be. like Thor, he did a great job with what he had.
Right, right.
But he didn't have the same kind of background that Robert Downey Jr. had. This man has had a long time to hone his craft and get sober. And he has managed to pull a spark that I don't think Chris has the ability to do yet.
Look, they made two Hulk movies,
which is why Iron Man's the best movie.
Yeah, well, I agree. Like Iron Man better too. I don't think that Thor will ever be as good as Iron Man in my book.
I don't think so either, but it is good.
I agree. But that said, they made two Hulk movies. The first one was bad.
Yeah, it was not good.
The second one was...
I don't normally say that, but it was not good.
The second one was fun, but not great.
I liked the Edward Norton
one. It was all right.
It was good.
I agree.
And I liked the Hulk anyway, but...
Agreed.
The Edward Norton Hulk was the closest I think we've ever come on film to what a Hulk movie should be.
That
I don't think it was right. I just...
Yeah.
It was the closest we've ever come.
I'm saying Thor 2, I think it's a given. It's going to happen.
I hope so, because I enjoyed the story.
You know, I didn't expect in Thor, I didn't expect the going back and forth between Asgard and this little town, this little dusty town in the south, New Mexico, right? I didn't expect that to work. I thought, oh God, you know, the juxtaposition is just going to be crazy here and it's not going to work at all. And I loved it. I loved watching Thor stand out and make his way around this little southwest town.
Because that's what would happen if a Norse god came to, you know, New Mexico. You go, okay, he doesn't fit, you know. So I liked Thor better than Captain America.
Me too. Captain America, I would put down around the second Hulk movie. I enjoyed it. It was fun. I'll watch it again, you know, for a buck out of a Redbox. But I mean, it wasn't incredible. It was fun. one last little thing about this. Audra pointed out, and that was neat. When they show his like fake driver's license in the movie.
Oh, it's the picture of him smiling that that what's her name took in the cafe
from Nick and Nora's. You know, when he has
Darcy,
a dumb Darcy has
Darcy.
A dumb grin on his face, and she's like,
she's
that's
like,
going
smile,
on,
yeah.
That's going on Twitter or Facebook
that's going
or whatever.
On Facebook.
Yeah, that's the picture on his driver's license. It's funny.
So we went back and watched Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, which I haven't seen since probably 1991 or something. I know it came out in 88. And one thing that I thought was kind of neat, as we're talking about Thor, I was thinking about all the different elements of that movie that make it geeky goodness. Like, obviously you have the Marvel action hero, and you have the fantasy story. And you have Norse mythology, but you also have this Kenneth Branagh aspect of it, who is known for doing Shakespeare, right? So you've got kind of mythology and literature and comic books and superheroes and fantasy, and those are all different elements of the geek universe. I think that Bill and Ted, and I never knew this, and I've said this before as a kid, I never knew I was a geek. I never knew I loved sci-fi and all those kind of classic geek things. Because I just didn't realize that there were other people out there like me and that, you know, you could see yourself that way. And I just had the same thought. It's like, we've got time travel, we've got historical figures, you know, we've got all these kind of brainy, you know, the types of things that people who are interested and curious in history and people and culture would be into. You know, there are jokes about philosophy. There are jokes about Sigmund Freud and Socrates and Genghis Khan and all kinds of things that...
Rude.
You know?
Yeah. Look under Socrates.
Yeah, right. It's under Socrates. But it just made me think of that, you know? I continue to be amazed at how much I fit into the geek mold as a kid and yet had no idea. You know, and I always loved this movie, and now I look back on it, I'm like, of course I love this movie. How could I not have it? All the same things that I love today, it has.
You know, along those same lines, when I was watching it, and I realized that I hadn't watched this in at least 5 or 6 years, if not more. Maybe
you've seen
10.
It that recently?
Yeah, I think so. I don't remember exactly, but I know it hasn't been since it came out, and, you know, I've seen it since, but it, no, I mean, we're talking... a number of years, many years ago. You know, there were some things I got this time around that I didn't before. And one was that when I saw it at the time, you know, I saw it in the theater.
Oh, did you? That's yeah. Cool.
I thought, I thought, you know, these guys, I didn't see Bill and Ted as geeks. I saw Bill and Ted as like cool guys.
Yeah, they are cool guys, aren't they?
Well, if you think about it, they're actually... modern non-standard geeks, you know, like, you know, the modern geek definition is broadened a lot. We talked about this a whole bunch. I mean, if you go back to the, if you're new to GWC, if you go back to the geek arc we did, you know, one of the things that, that has happened in the last, I think, 5, 6, 10 years or whatever is that, you know, geek used to be defined very narrowly as like computer geek or
right. Antisocial male.
Right. And, know. And now it's become person who focuses on who is obsessed with a particular subject or knows more than the standard. And you can go back to our podcast. We did a whole arc about it, you know, but that modern non-standard geek, that broader definition, they are that. In fact, you'll notice the Star Wars reference in it, you know, And
oh yeah, they have the lightsaber battle with the swords.
Oh yeah,
it's so fun. They're using real swords.
Yeah,
having a fake battle.
And it's like, I mean, and their joy for the things that they care about, you know, and
like their music.
Yeah,
and their philosophy of life.
Yeah, exactly. Which, whether they're great or smart or not particularly bright or whatever, it doesn't matter. They're focused in a very specific way. They are modern non-standard geeks. I would have never imagined that back then. I just saw the separation, and I always saw myself as the geek and them, you know, and not in a good way, right? and them as these cool kids. It's interesting that if you look at it, you
know, I saw myself as like a dork.
Right. Well, yeah, either way, there are new words for all this, but
right. But I mean like negative.
Yeah. That's what I was trying to say. Yeah. So yeah, anyway, I just think, you know, I think that this is a geek movie, you know, and I wouldn't.
Well, it's got time travel automatically.
It's sci-fi.
Sci-fi.
But it's got time travel. It's got, you know, it's got all of these things that make it a geek movie. And I never really, I knew it was back then, but I couldn't have told you why without, you know, 5 years of GWC.
Yeah. It was very surprising. When this movie came out, much like, the way, Wayne's World took people where everybody thought, oh, it's going to be a stupid, you know, movie and everything like that. And Wayne's World was nothing but heart. I mean, nothing. I mean, it had a lot of comedy in it and everything like that. This movie was very the same way. It took, I think, a lot of people by surprise and had depth that, you know, two guys, whoa, dude, you know, two guys woeing and doing through the whole movie, and it still told a great story and with a you know, great message, had a whole bunch of stuff, and you couldn't help but feel educated and filled with a little bit more of the wonder of childhood than you were before you started the movie.
And what's geekier than that?
Yeah, and by the end of the movie, it's like, gotcha. You know,
you learned.
Yeah, you didn't realize it hit you, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Them too.
Did you notice the character of their teacher? I love the way that they portrayed him because he's very stern.
Was he in Revenge of the Nerds?
Oh, don't get me lying.
Wasn't he the
might have been
black fraternity, like, damn it.
the Lambda, Lambda, Lambda.
Yeah, like he was like the national or one of, I can't remember. He was in something very like iconic like that. And anyway, I'm sorry.
Well, I love the way that he plays the role of this teacher, who is basically the guy who says, hey, you know, he sets up the stakes, basically. These are the stakes, right? If you don't do something extraordinary on this project and get an A+, you're going to fail the class, both of you. But he's not a dick about it, you know, like so many teachers are, like not like in Breakfast Club where the, you know, the people who work at the school actually take pleasure in
mess with the bull, you get the horns.
Yeah, exactly. He's not like that. He's like, you know, I'm sorry, guys, but I'm going to have no choice but to flunk you. And you realize that the teacher doesn't want to flunk them. I never picked up on that as a kid.
He's really not a bad guy.
But now that I teach, I'm looking at him and I'm like, man, he likes these guys and he's being kind and he's trying to give them a straight up message. And
this from the teacher.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I feel like I can understand that now. There's so much more, though, that I got out of this movie than the last time I saw this movie. I was in like seventh grade.
Yeah, you probably got different things out of it now than you did when you were a kid.
I got to tell you, the funniest thing that I think the funniest moment in this entire movie for me was when Bill's quote unquote mom, Missy, won't take them anywhere until they do his chores. So they've got all the people doing stuff around the house.
They're running around and doing chores.
Yeah. And Sigmund Freud has the vacuum hose attachment and he's cleaning the couch. And at one point he looks at it and he puts his mouth on it and it starts sucking really hard on the mouth and he like falls over on the floor. And I was like, holy crap, that was hilarious. And like later there's a scene where he's got a big corn dog and he's
Freud's having all these Freudian slips.
Yeah. I just thought it was
awesome.
Great.
Yeah, the
something
thing,
you don't get when you're 11, you know.
No. The thing that got me, especially this time around, that I had gotten before, but it didn't really hit me as bad, like you said, 5 years of GWC, you know, analytics. But you don't really see. You remember when you were a kid, you had this, like all kids have this dream that they're going to change the world.
Yeah,
and you know, through life, you know. Being the you know cruel bitch that she is, there's you know
why
you
does
wind
it have
up
to be a woman,
you know,
gonna just be like a big dickhead.
Whatever
your life,
whatever
being the cruel fuck that he is,
dickhead, get it right.
There's you know you wind up losing that a little bit, but there's an ability that kids have that they can change the world. And you have all these kids have these dreams. You don't wind up having those as you get a little bit older. You know, life beats beats you up a little bit and you wind up, you know, scaling back or whatever. But it's this kind of reminder that that every once in a while happens. And it's like they find out, you know, for real that, okay, not only do you have to walk this path, our world won't exist without you. And it's kind of one of those reverse children's tales, you know, like the children, oh, you know, it's all full of hope and wonder. They know they have a big responsibility to live up to. And they're these just two guys. And I always loved that, you know, because when you're a kid, you always expect that your, you know, contribution to the planet is going
to be small.
Yeah, will be small. And you hope you hope for big things, but you know, sometimes you may or may not believe it. Well, they, from day one, have always, I mean, they've never lost it. They've never taken their eyes off the dream. You know, instead of, you know, being this cruel and harsh thing, they've always had the, you know, the Xanadu glitter running around with fairies running around on roller skates. That's happening for them. They refuse to believe that they are as bad as, or that life can be as bad as everyone says it is. And through that, they quite literally change society and the planet as they know it. I was always fascinated with that, you know, because you don't see, that doesn't happen. Even in the movies, most of the time, that doesn't happen. It's always pain and strife and death and struggle and all that kind of, they don't do that. You know, their contribution,
really good point.
Everybody they meet is sort of like Wally, is better for having met them. And they're these, you know, basically Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, you know, I mean, they just are what they want to be already, without the fame, without any of that stuff. They are who they always wanted to be. The world will come to appreciate that.
And I think the movie actually makes that argument that their wisdom is worthwhile. They make a lot of jokes about how these guys are kind of goofy, and they seem like these kind of shallow surfer guys or whatever. But in reality, the movie's trying to say that they have a wisdom that we should pay attention to. And it's when Ted quotes Socrates when they first start studying, and he's like, you know, the greatest wisdom is knowing that you know nothing. And Bill's like, dude, that's us. But it's true. You know, they don't have any pretense for who they are. And you're right. I mean, it's like their way of seeing the world, this kind of just
is the correct way.
Yeah. And they create this wonderful society. He's like, what does he say? What does Rufus say at the end? Your music has eliminated war and poverty. And I kind of laughed, but
the air guitar, you know, replenishes the ozone and, you know, and it's excellent for dancing, you know, but it's them being who they are quite literally changes everything about the way society works, and you know, society and everybody recognizes how everything should be because of the way they live their lives and the way they do their music. That is really cool. And I don't think I got that as a kid.
No.
You know, you're just like, hey, cool, it works out for him. No, yeah, it was working out for him before that. Nobody had caught up yet, you know. Really, really cool. Anyway.
I have a couple of kind of not as serious, but just funny things from when I saw this and experiences I've had related to it. Number one, Missy, mom, Bill's mom, drives this red Mustang convertible with a white top.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My dad had one exactly like that. It was, except instead of a 5 liter, it was the 3.8.
I was going to say, you had a red Vanilla Ice Mustang.
No. This one didn't have the cool wheels and it wasn't the 5 liter. Okay. So it wasn't, but it was the same car. It was the same color. It had the same top. It was like,
I got the rag top down so my hair can blow.
And yeah, I borrowed it when I was in high school and
it was cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And, then, also, the Circle K, I grew up in Texas. There are no Circle Ks in Texas. But I forget who owns it.
There are now.
It's the same. Are there really?
I live by one.
Oh, yeah, there are.
Across the bridge.
Oh, yeah, right.
Circle K.
No kidding. We should go take a picture there for the blog. But, you know, so I had never seen a Circle K. I thought it was like fictitious or something, you know, because you don't. no internet back then.
Strange things are afoot at the Circle K.
I know. It's like awesome. The line, right? So
they actually speak really intelligently.
I went to school in Florida, and my first day going to school, I was driving from Titusville to Orlando because I lived with my dad in Titusville, and I was driving in on State Road 50, and in Bithlow, in the little town in the middle, there is a Circle K right off the side of the road, and I'm like,
we are stopping right now.
Holy crap, there's a Circle K, and it's funny because I was trying to tell somebody that I knew out there that I'm like, holy crap, there's a Circle K out there. Like, and they're like,
yeah,
whatever, it would be like here, there's a 7-Eleven, and everybody's like, yeah.
And
I'm like, no, really, no, street things are afoot at the Circle K. They're like, what the hell is wrong with you,
And yeah. And it's kind of funny because this movie had so many pop culture, what turned into pop culture references in it, that you don't really remember where this crap came from until you start watching the movie and you're like, oh my, holy crom. Holy crom.
Yeah.
I forgot that came from here. Just all that stuff. I mean, the first time you really see Keanu Reeves before The Matrix, if you told me before The Matrix, oh yeah, we're going to get Keanu Reeves to do it, I'm like, the whoa guy?
Actually, that happened when the first Matrix movie was coming
out.
True, people
yeah.
heard that Keanu Reeves was in it. A lot of people still thought of him as Ted.
Yeah.
And were like, you've got to be kidding
me. He's not going to be able to pull this off. And before you knew that he actually had depth.
Right, because everyone saw him as character, kind of.
Yeah, and you're like, that's not going to work.
I love how everybody tries to stick with that, and by the third movie, Matrix movie, they just kind of don't say anything about him.
Yeah.
They can't say anything nice, so they just, it's all bad. Yeah. So they just don't say anything at all because they know it's a bunch of BS,
Yeah, exactly. It's just, but this, it had the ability, like, they are so, Bill and Ted, the characters are so well done that if you'd have handed anybody else a time machine with the keys to a time machine and anywhere you want to go, do your thing. Every one of us would have probably ended the planet in some kind of way. we'd have biffed our way into anything that was bad. These guys have a mission and they stick with that. They're both, humble and, on task and on point and not mean enough to go and change things purposely. Now, they do change some things.
They don't Doc Brown it.
Yeah, they don't Doc Brown it. They don't do any of that. They just do what they're supposed to do, and they're given a second chance to do it. And they make stuff work. Now, they do a little bit, at the end with, okay, we got to remember to put the keys under the bush. I mean, yeah, they do that stuff.
Hey, it was me that stole my dad's keys.
But they're not mean about it.
No.
They don't cause anybody to suffer needlessly that they can help. And I think that's different than anybody else who would get a time machine.
Including us.
Yeah,
I appreciate it too. Like the ending, there were a couple of things that we've seen before in this type of story where essentially Rufus brings the princesses to them almost like gifts, but it doesn't feel that way. It doesn't feel bad.
Like, no, they feel like they were rescued.
Yeah.
Everybody feels like
they seemed interested too.
Right. They seemed interested. They're the same age as these guys and they were going to have to marry these two
Royal
older guys
ugly dudes
that they didn't want to marry. And instead of them being just like, here are these women who are your reward, it was more like, hey, here are these two.
Here's the bootyful princess.
Right. It was like, here are these two women that you had a connection with who, you also helped their lives get better. And you can tell that Bill and Ted are not like, sweet, in a kind of leering way. They're just like, awesome. And they're so simple and joyful.
And
you
got to
appreciate that. And they're in the band.
Which is, and you find out again, Rufus had to fix it because, oh, crap. Maybe they were supposed to bring them with them. Maybe they weren't, but they have to be here. They cannot, this cannot go any other way, so it was kind of funny, because Rufus is doing all these things and he seems like this great benefactor and everything. He's saving his own society.
He's Doc Brownin.
Oh yeah, he is. Rufus is totally Doc Brownin.
I've got to point out the brunette is the same chick from Better Off Dead.
Oh yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought she looked familiar.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And a different cute accent this time.
Oh, yeah. Man, she could come over and, speak in a French accent and help me fix my Camaro.
Or English.
Any day.
Either way.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I prefer the French, I think.
Either way.
That's just... Anyway.
I was surprised at how clean this movie was. Like, I remembered that scene where Missy, like, bends over and kind of shows a little bit of cleavage and stuff. I remember that from
being dirtier than it was.
I remember as a kid thinking, like, oh, you know, I know what that is. And now I'm just like, wow, this is, like, extremely clean.
Long way. I don't know which way in the last... Yeah.
Well, you know, I appreciated that they didn't make it nasty.
Everything has inflated.
Yeah.
Everything, literally.
I know.
Everything from the devalued currency to muscles and boobs. Yeah. Everything has inflated.
Or intensified.
If you had that scene in a movie, well, first of all, I mean, it's bad enough. This movie came out in 1989.
88, right?
89.
I thought it was 89.
It was 89.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And in fact, IMDb says that they dubbed, I guess, 87 in the movie. He says there's one scene where Bill says 87 and they dub 88 over it. If you look closely, you can see.
Oh.
Real quick, because apparently it delayed or something, the release delayed. Anyway, the value of currency has changed significantly since then.
Yeah.
I mean, the price of things is different, you know? But you can see it in people too. Like, this movie wasn't stylized 80s. It just was 80s.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just happened to be the century or the decade that it was in, you know. Ferris Bueller, very stylized.
Yeah, they made it that way
on purpose.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
This
they were kind
just
of caricatures
was.
Of the
Yeah.
Outside of Bill and Ted, everybody's just dressed the way people dress.
Like the people giving their presentations at the school?
Yeah.
A lot of high waists and that sucker.
Oh, God, you are not kidding.
Missy in those stretch pants.
Oh, wow.
I think the distance between, like, the...
Like 2 inches between her belt and her boobs.
You're like,
the
really?
Distance between, like, the... Well, I don't know how to put it, but basically her crotch was, like, in the middle instead of at the top of those pants.
Exactly.
Not good.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny. And it, but you
remember
look,
when I asked her to the prom?
Shut up, Ted.
That is all. And then in the report at the end, I just got
a little Oedipus complex.
A little Oedipal complex.
That was great.
Yeah. Oh, no, he did say edible, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
They got it all right in the presentation. They said Socrates instead of Socrates. Like,
they
fixed everything.
Yeah, well, yeah, they learned. And it was great. I love the choices that they made. And then when they bring them forward in time, they are who they are, but in kind of a clean way. You know, who recently trashed Ashwin's sporting goods? You know? Miss of Arc, you know. And
Miss
and,
of Arc.
You know, hey, Billy the Kid.
Did you look to see who played her?
I did not.
Yeah, it's like, who was it?
Wasn't Lily Sobieski, was it?
I don't remember that. You didn't tell me her
Could
name.
Could be her.
She wasn't born then, was she?
No, I seriously doubt it. She was a kid.
I'm trying to remember. I feel
you just said it was a chick who's the lead singer of some band.
Yeah, well, not lead singer, but crap, I'm going to have to look now. And I had to look it up because I realized another thing I did not get when I first saw this movie was that they actually go to the trouble of, oh yeah, she was in the Go-Go's, Jane Wedlin.
Huh?
Yeah. And you know, they literally,
there are a lot of musicians in this
movie. They go to a great trouble to include a lot of musicians in the thing, the three
Which
most important people
since,
in the world,
since it's their music that
all musicians.
Yeah.
The dude with the giant, like, frosted flat top, Clarence Clemons from E Street Band.
See, I didn't get any of these references.
Well, I didn't know. I was like, he looks familiar, and Chuck looked him up.
Yeah.
Now, Wedlin was in Star Trek IV. And here's the trick.
Wait, that chick?
Yeah.
As who?
I forget.
I forget. No, very memorable.
No. Oh, she was on one of the, she did one of the cameos on the ships, one of the obvious cameos. You remember
she was one of the Enterprise crew or something.
Yeah. Who is the other person that's real famous that did that? And it was like, anyway, like, remember at the beginning of the movie when the storm is there and they have, when the whale ship shows up?
Is it like Alyssa Milano or something? Like,
and who was the captain of one of the ships, the female captain?
Oh,
you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah. Crap.
I feel stupid. It's been a while. I need to go back and watch these again.
See,
I've been wanting to watch Star Trek 4.
Not me putting you on the spot.
Yeah, I know.
It's okay, though. All right, but here's the deal. if you go and look, go to IMDb. This is fun. Go to IMDb and click through all of the people in this movie, and almost every one of them has been in a Trek TV series, episode, or movie. Like virtually every one of them.
So a bunch of geeks.
Literally.
That's awesome.
It's another really connection. Cool. But apparently, yeah, apparently, if you just to make it even bigger, if you go to Jane Whedon's IMDb page and you check her trivia, it actually says that she's in a band now, I guess. I forget. Anyway, this is stupid. I shouldn't be doing this live here. But the point is if you look through, not only are they in, are people on, if you look at IMDb and you look quick through the pages, not only are, have they played in Trek, most of them are fans, you know? So it's another connection, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was the Joan of Arc thing. I never really knew much about Joan of Arc when I saw the movie the first time. And I still don't know a ton, but, you know, we know that she was basically a 14-year-old girl who had these mystical visions, and people believed in her visions and followed her into war against the English and drove the English out of France. But eventually they turned on her, the same people who had followed her, they turned on her and burned her at the stake for being a heretic because they just decided that they didn't believe her. And I thought it was interesting. You know, they didn't really address much of that. They just had her as a warrior and kind of a fitness enthusiast.
She was doing like the jazzercise and stuff like that.
It did feel almost like they didn't really know what to do with her.
And honestly, they had swordplay with her, so I was good with that.
But actually, it's just like Genghis Khan. You like you said, it's supposed to be relatively clean, so
right,
you're not going to be accurate with these things, because guess what, that would be bad.
You know? I thought the cool thing, though, was that the question that they had to answer for their project, the prompt was, how would historical figures from your specified time periods, maybe that's why they had Joan of Arc, because they were assigned that time period, right?
Yeah.
From your time periods, how would they react to 1988 San Dimas? And it's perfect because you get to see precisely how they actually react.
And Napoleon goes to Waterloo.
That was awesome.
That's funny.
I don't think it's going to work.
No?
No. He just smashes everything. Triumph, Napoleon.
I mean, he cheats at bowling.
He cheats. Yeah, he cheats at everything. He has to win.
And then they ditch him, and he's like, dude, you can't ditch Napoleon. And his little brother's like, he was a dick.
It's true. Yeah.
I mean, and it's kind of funny, you know, because Abraham Lincoln and Billy the Kid were the only ones who were like, you know, for the group and trying to stay together and all that kind of stuff.
They're the only ones who spoke English.
Yeah,
actually, I meant to say, if you notice, like by the end, they all are actually trying to help, which is a little bit absurd, but well, it doesn't matter. It's cool anyway.
It's absurd they could all fit in that phone booth.
Exactly. Right? I mean, I'm willing to overlook that.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, I mean, if you think about it, like, because there are the times where like even Genghis Khan helps him out.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody like does their little presentation and everything, and everybody's like,
well, it's Billy the Kid and who is it? Abraham Lincoln, who saved them from getting executed, right?
The D'Artagnan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Put them in the Iron Maiden. They're like, sweet.
Execute them. That guy needs a monocle.
Oh, yeah. But they did such a great job of putting them through history in kind of a clean and funny way and having them exposed to this stuff so that they grow both as people but stay the same. And they did stay the same, which is something none of us could have done. You know, they're so pure and so good-hearted that they don't really change, even though they grow. They still maintain that. And
yeah, that's a great. And like at the end when Bill's like, maybe we should learn how to play.
Yeah,
you know,
growth.
Yeah, exactly. They grow, growth.
But they don't change who they are.
Yeah, you know, they still don't give up on their dream. They don't really change who they are, but they just grow, which is the best of all of it that you can have. And none of us are really capable of doing that. You know, I mean, life jades you and you wind up getting, you know, hurt or whatever, but they are quite literally, and Rufus is not kidding about this, they are the best of us, even though they don't really kind of, act like it sometimes, or we don't think they should, you know, the best of us shouldn't act like that. That's not something that we would think of and look at that, but they really are.
And I think the movie though would hope that maybe when you say that none of us is capable of that, I think the movie would hope that we could try.
Well, that's the hope. And they change us to be, you know, society learns from them enough that we can be more Bill and Ted-ish than we were before. And they do change it, which is the whole point, you know.
Yeah.
You can learn to do this. We did. You know, our whole society changed on the basis of your example, which is, as a little kid, kind of what you hope happens one day, although you can't really vocalize it or really imagine how that would be. But they changed the world with who they are and their music. You know, other people try and change it different ways, but for them, it actually does work out like that. They just don't really know, which is, it's kind of cool. I didn't get that in the movie from the first couple times. I mean, now, like you said, after years and years of what we come to expect from GWC tearing stuff apart, we can get that. But I didn't get it as a kid. It just kind of was assumed. You know, it's planted, but it's also conscious. You know, I don't know. At least for me, that's what it was.
And on the other hand, you get Billy the Kid and Socrates hitting on chicks at the mall.
Yeah, which is great.
That was funny. He's like, I'm Billy. And then Socrates like points at him like, introduce me too.
Yeah, points at himself. Socrates.
Oh, does he call him Socrates? I think Billy calls him Socrates. Yeah, and then he's like, Socrates.
And
we actually get to hear the guy speaking ancient Greek in the beginning, which is pretty cool. But Socrates comes off funny, but he comes off as, I remember as a kid thinking that he seemed a little bit dim, you know, because he communicates almost entirely through sign language.
Because nobody speaks ancient. Does anyone know ancient Greek?
It was so funny in that when we were watching the movie and they were trying to talk, Bill and Ted are like introducing themselves to Socrates. I was like, holy crap, the English language as we know it didn't even exist in Socrates' time. Like, you know,
they are literally speaking gibberish.
Yeah, even the early Anglo-Saxon languages that was going to be based on were still like many, many centuries away.
Oh, yeah.
And it kind of blew my mind. Like, whoa, that language hasn't even been invented for another, you know.
Actually, I've always thought that was kind of one of the cool things about a lot of ballsy far future movies that look that far, or stories. Like it's easy to write about, I think, near future, like say 20 years ahead or 50 years ahead. Making movies can be cool 20 or 50 years ahead, but it can be scary too, because it's too tempting to include too much of the current culture, and you have to predict in ways that we've seen happen before, and it's harder sometimes to visualize, right?
Sure.
Sometimes you end up Babylon 5, you know, where everything looks dated 10 years later. And sometimes you end up, you know, like 2001, where you're like, everything still looks futuristic in 2011 and 12.
I was like, shaved heads, people. And yeah. Chuck's like, I like to think it's retro.
Yeah. But then there are movies and stories like I think of Arthur C. Clarke's 3001. Right. You know, I don't know. Most people realize.
I haven't seen that one.
Yeah. But there's, what is it? 2063. I forget the middle one that I always forget the name of. I've read them all. But. And you know, in 2001, 2010, 2063, I think it was, and then 3001. And in 3001, it's obviously the far, far future. And when you go 1,000 years forward, you know, things like what you're talking about happen. It's not just that, hey, look, they have smaller computers, you know, and their cell phone is smaller, and, you know, and they have video in their glasses. It's like they speak different languages. Cultures have completely evolved and devolved in this amount of time. It may have no connection to anything that you're used to understanding at all. The technology they have isn't even anything that you can place the origins of.
Yeah.
You know,
right. Even, I mean, if we're just talking about the English language, for example, you know, it's possible that 1,000 years from now, people speaking the descendant of English would be able to understand some of what we say now. But I mean, who knows? I mean, the biggest changes in the language came from military conquest, right? So who knows the way that could change? That's why I always thought it was cool, like in the Firefly universe, the way that they incorporate a lot of Chinese sayings and things like that, because that's what happens. But it would be much more so.
Yeah, and even that is sort of a near future sort of thing.
Right.
Well, yeah, if you back us up 1,000 years ago, they're still in sailing ships. You know, we have space vehicles. I mean, they have no reference of electricity or any of that stuff. I mean, they wouldn't even know the foundation that most of our society's technological advances are based on.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, fast forward us 1,000 years.
A thousand years ago, people on one side of the planet were not aware of people on the other side of the planet.
Yeah, and now we talk to people on the other side of the planet on a regular basis. They're our friends.
Easily, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, and that's what I'm saying is that we just, it's, I think it's ballsy sometimes to write stories that take place in that future, you know, where that we cannot comprehend. You know, and I think it's Bowman. It's been a while since I read it, but the basis of 3001 is, you remember, wasn't it Bowman that gets flung off into space?
Oh, yeah, he's just out of his time. Yeah, I think it's him.
And he is obviously in a solar orbit, right? And in 3000, they find him.
So he becomes a planet.
No, they revive him, and his life does not go well from there.
And they find him, and they can revive him because they have that kind of medical technology. And he essentially wakes up in a place that just has no
bearing.
Doesn't
understand, yeah.
At all. He can't understand. You think about sexual roles now versus 1,000 years ago, right?
Right.
Well, I mean, there, he just can't even recognize what's happening. You know, it's just not even, things aren't even remotely the same. He can't understand any of the technology on a level far more than your grandpa can't run the computer. I mean, he does not know what things are.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. They have these organic, you know, biomechanical things and stuff that he just doesn't get. And everybody else has is a standard part of their lives. And they live these standard kind of roles that he can't even recognize. And anyway, I think about
that's
that.
Awesome. I mean, it makes me want to read those because I haven't yet.
Yeah. I think about that and I realize how, you know, this in a way, there are some fun things like the fact that,
well, in here you have the big past, you know, thing, people from, you know, what, hundreds at least.
It was 2600 was the year or something, right?
Yeah. I mean,
in Bill and Ted, yeah, it was 26 something.
Yeah. And you're just like, okay, how's that going
to
work?
They're trying to cut the middle, you know?
Yeah. And yeah, they have that kind of Greek forum, you know, the future Greek forum, you know, sitting there.
My triple husbandoid.
Yeah. How do you view this much greeting?
Audra's like, the hairstyles. This is how this all came up, by the way. Audra was like, look, the hairstyles. It's so dated. I'm like, I like to think it's retro.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
They came back around.
Like, shaved heads, people.
But
wait, George Carlin looked young.
Well, George Carlin was awesome.
That was weird. That was cool.
I mean, looking back on it, I can't think of anyone else who could have done Rufus that way. I really can't.
I wanted more of him. I didn't realize how small a role he actually played in the movie because I always thought it was kind of a big deal, you know?
Well, it was actually around that time that he started trying to do some Queen stuff.
Yeah. For his kids and his grandkids and stuff like that. Yeah, like he did
Thomas the
Train. And Squeak watches the hell out of those Thomas the Train.
Yeah.
I didn't know George Carlin did those. That's cool.
Yeah.
No, he narrated all of them.
It was his thing.
And he wanted to do something. I can't remember if it was daughter's granddaughter or whatever, but he wanted to do something that they could watch and appreciate.
Yeah.
And so he did the Thomas the Train Engine stuff, which Squeak watches every day.
That's awesome.
She can hear it because it starts off with this little song and then George Carlin starts talking. She can hear the song and she will come screaming from wherever she is in the house to listen to sit down
so awesome.
And listen to George Carlin tell her about Thomas the Train. So yeah, not a lot, but some really well done stuff for kids and later audiences.
But he did that. He did that very short lived TV show.
Yeah.
You remember that on one of the major networks?
Was it a sitcom or a
sort of
stand up show or
sitcom / dramedy, mm-hmm. You know, it was one of those things and it didn't work. It didn't really pan out. I still remember the line that always comes for that is that he played this homeless guy. And at one point he's like, man, compared to your place, my place is a cardboard box. And they're like, where do you live? And he's like,
cardboard box.
And he was trying to write these, I think, to write and perform these jokes that were just not him, you know, and it didn't really work. Whereas the Thomas the Train thing was like entirely different.
Yeah.
So it's fine. You know?
So he could do that. He didn't have to inject much of himself other than
a different part of himself.
But he didn't have
to. Not like a censored version of what you normally do, but a different thing.
Yeah, you don't have to just kind of bend it. You can do the stuff that, you know, when you do read to your grandchildren or whatever, your kids or something, this is the type of person you are. And that's kind of what you get. You know, Uncle George is going to tell you about Thomas now. In this movie, I think he got the I'm going to make everything work out for you. You know, I have to make everything work out for
and
you.
And it works.
And it does. It really does. And you see Rufus. And I love the moment when they go into the future and, you know, George Carlin is there, you know, or Rufus is there, and they go into this. And these people are meeting the creators of their society. Not really, but they kind of are.
Did you notice that later on, Bill refers to that and he's like, yeah, those people worshipped us there. And there's not an ounce of pride or power hunger
or
anything.
Wonder.
It's just like, awesome. Wow, I wonder why.
Yeah. I matter. People care about me. This is really cool.
There was some great music, you know, and he didn't know it was his, you know.
He's like, I hope I can do it right.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of think about it. It's almost like, yeah, you're right. These are like these guys that are untainted by all the bad stuff.
And it's because anybody else, you either got a big head or you just screwed it up or something like that. And they are there to the point where they're just, okay, I'm going to make this work. You know, I don't know how. I don't know what we're going to do. I'm going to make this work. I'm going to do what I need to do. Because, you know, at a certain point, they feel a little bit responsible, I think, for what's happening. At least at the end of this movie. Now, when we go into Bogus Journey, you know, some stuff has taken a turn. But it works out. At the end of this movie, you realize that they are now set on the path that they needed to be.
You know, I have to admit,
the difference between knowing the path and walking. Sorry.
I always had a big crush on Alex Winter, who plays Bill. And
Roger made a really interesting point about this.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Well, I think it's funny because I remember watching that movie, maybe, I think it was on video, a while after it came out. So again, you know, I was about seventh grade and I remember people thought that Ted was the good looking one, you know, but I was like, oh, I love Bill. And I used to draw a lot in my notebooks in school if I had a study hall or something. I would draw these. I tried to draw caricatures based on the kind of things that you'd see like in Mad Magazine or whatever.
Sure.
And I remember one time drawing a caricature of Bill and getting it almost perfect. And just, it was one of those moments where it just turns out right. And you're like, holy crap, you know?
Yes, I'm familiar with those. I don't have enough of them.
Yeah. I mean, well, yeah, it happened when I was like 12 and it still stands out in my memory. So yeah, I haven't had very many either. But I could not, I don't know, like it, something about the way he looks, like his hair and his kind of his features and his eyes and stuff. I just couldn't take my eyes off him. When we watch this, just like, recently for the podcast, it was the same way. Like I could not take my eyes off him, and I don't mean like I was enamored with him or something, but there's just something about the way he looks that I wanted to look at him more than
he's
very striking to me. Yeah. And I don't know if other people think that or what, but I was thinking, you know, there's something familiar about his features, like this curly hair with kind of a long hairline cut in the back and this kind of straight aquiline nose and these really super round eyes. And they're like, what is familiar about that?
This is great.
And I was
by
like,
the way,
oh my God,
you will appreciate
and
this.
And I pull up Google Images and I show Chuck and I show him a side shot of the face of Michelangelo's David.
It's
and I'm
true.
Like, look at this. And there are a lot of similarities. If you look at Alex Winter, he looks a lot like Michelangelo's
in the
David.
Face. Okay. In the face and even his hair.
Yeah.
It is literally remarkably similar.
You're like, this is Michelangelo's perfect man.
Holy
right?
crap.
I know.
You're
I'm like the
okay,
standard of beauty
taken,
for a
know?
Lot of Western, you know. And I'm sure I didn't make that connection when I was younger,
but that's
at the same
point
time,
about
it kind of
like
gets
that.
Into your culture, you know.
You know, this is something Sean and I have talked about a lot. And
plus, I got
I
a thing for curly hair.
I you know, these standards of beauty, you may not know them, but you get them.
Yeah, you can see them. And
you
they communicate to you whether you think they do or not.
Exactly. So, like, you saw it. you didn't know why. Now you just know why because of additional education and additional, you know, understanding.
And things I've learned from talking to Sean about, you know, symmetry and what makes
you're
people
like, why
beautiful
is this and awesome? And then you realize, now you might know why, but it's the same thing, you know? I just think that's really cool. When you show me that, I was like, okay, I get that.
That's awesome. I am really, really interested to know what GWC people think. Like, if I'm just totally kind of, was I the only one who thought that, or, you know, have other people had the same idea? I bet someone else has thought the same thing, just because in GWC that seems to work that way.
See, it used to bother Shannon a lot. She was, when we were dating, this was years and years ago, but we were dating, she's like, I was taller. Actually, I'm like, actually, I wouldn't be as attracted to you if you were. I'm more interested in the classic type of beauty. And she's like, oh, yeah, 5'8". I'm like, look, when I say classic, I mean classic, classic. And I started showing her pictures of
like Audrey Hepburn kind of thing.
Well, no, I mean, further back, you know, like Venus de Milo.
Oh,
you know, that kind of stuff.
Oh, like classical.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, look, your body type is this, you know, tall and skinny is actually pretty recent. You know, this, the, if you look at Greek and Roman and all that kind of stuff, the modern, you know, the modern woman in Greece and Rome was about 5'3", 5'4", built like you are. I'm like, that's attractive. Mm-hmm. It's only very recently within the last 100 years where that has been vastly changed.
Yeah. I mean,
and I'm like,
those
look,
statues,
it's
like a little bit somewhat wider in the hips, not what I'd call wide, but like more natural
right
looking
and more curvy and all that kind of stuff, which it, you know, I, at one point I, you know, superimposed them like, look, this is your body type and this is what their ideal of beauty was. And Shannon's like, damn, I'm close. I'm like, yes, you are, you know, and it was kind of funny because people don't realize if you modernize some of the haircuts and some, like you're saying, sometimes even not, what we see as beautiful really hasn't changed much. You know, sometimes it does, and depending on what you're into, but the concept of symmetry and beauty and curves and the human form, man, that's been around a while and we've been digging it, and it keeps repeating itself. You know, and different things would be in style and vogue and everything. Only modern stuff has been, I guess, hyper stylized to the point where it looks radically different than it has for the last couple thousand years. And it's funny.
It is weird when you think about it.
Yeah. I mean,
what else is weird, I think, is that the ideal of beauty is so much less common in nature now than the ideal of beauty used to be.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of funny. But, and this, you see a little bit of it, you know, Bill and Ted, but it is kind of funny that now that you mention it. Yeah. He does look a lot like, at least from the neck up.
Anyway. Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah. Isn't that funny?
No, he is a lot like David, but it's kind of cool.
I need to, basically find pictures. I'll put them side by side. I grabbed a screen cap here of the David picture, but I mean, it's here you go.
Yeah, he does look like him. Thin out those curls a little bit, and it looks like him.
Yeah, I know.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
But it's, I don't think we've really, or I, this is a fantastic movie to watch. I don't think I'd seen it in the last couple of years with the same kind of eye I do now.
No, hell no, I agree.
And there is so much crap packed in this movie.
Yes.
I mean, we didn't even get to the time travel phone booth real stuff.
I know, but we can pile some of that in next week or next movie too.
Yeah. I mean, it was really elegantly put together, the whole thing.
This was really a joy to watch again. I am so glad that we took the time to do it. Audra, we're getting ready to wrap up. You got anything to...
She's like, no, I was staring at David.
No, I was looking for a picture of Alex Winter because I have no idea what he looks like now. But he's got to be about your age, Chuck, right?
Yeah.
Old.
Yeah.
No, I just mean,
old man.
I mean, when I watched this movie.
There's a picture of him on his IMDb page, and he aged well, I thought.
Yeah.
I mean, he looks like an old version of his young self.
He looks like
fun.
The same. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's
kind of like
cool.
Scott Conn as he gets older.
Yeah.
You know, he's an older version of himself. He's still cool looking. He's just older.
Mm-hmm.
I just like Scott Conn.
Yeah.
I'm going to need a minute.
Audra will be back in about 10 minutes. Sean, no, I'm just kidding. So, yeah.
Well, I'm having a really good time talking about this movie, and I was just really delighted at how well it stood up, and it brought even more than I could have imagined. I mean, I had fun with it when I was a kid, and like Sean is saying, there's a lot there. So if you haven't seen it ever, or if it's been a long time since you've seen it, you should go back, check it out. And then I think next week we're going to talk a little bit about the second of the two movies, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Indeed. Sean?
Well, a belated thank you to 01, who has provided me with a distraction that me and my brother have been playing for the last couple of weeks, which is Dynasty Warriors Gundam, or Gundam 3 Dynasty Warriors or whatever. It's basically the Gundam game that is built on Dynasty Warriors engine. I love that game. So thank you, sir. We've been playing the hell out of it. The meetup is coming.
Yes.
Here in March, and we're still prepping on this end for it and everything, but the date and time and all that places are set. I encourage everybody to get your reservations as quickly as you can and everything. So it'll be cool. And also thank you for everybody who's given us holiday awesomeness.
Oh, yes.
and just sent the awesomest loot that I've gotten in any amount of years.
So kind.
It's been incredible to see the outpouring of festivities and coolness. So thank you.
Yeah, there's a lot of excitement about the meetup, which is getting me excited again. Yeah.
Me too. In closing up for me, just a couple things to say about the meetup. Look, in the next couple of weeks, we'll be posting some more schedule stuff and more details about what's going on. Those who have been before will remember that things firm up in the next month or so. I would like to say that, and we're not ready to announce anything yet, but I think that it's probably worth considering that if you're planning when you're going to come, being here earlier on Friday might be a good idea, because we're looking at some things that might start earlier in the day on Friday this year. If you don't, it's not going to be the end of the world. Don't worry. It's not going to miss the whole damn thing if you don't get in on in the morning on Friday. But if you have a choice and you're thinking about coming in Thursday night, or you're thinking about coming in Friday mid-afternoon, come in Thursday night. It'll be better for you. Trust me. Same thing on Sunday. We're still talking about some things going on Sunday. There's always fun going on. Even if nothing is planned, Sunday tends to be the day where the people who stick around get to hang out and screw off. So I've seen people asking on the forum, and I just like to mention that if you're planning and you have those days available, do it. But don't feel like if you don't, you're going to be screwed.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That said, I think that's it for this week. And God, it was a lot of fun. And welcome to 2012, another good year of GWC.
Yay!
We'll see you next week. On behalf of everyone here at GWC, thanks for listening. And thanks to all who make GWC possible, including producer Soleil, forum moderators Badger Spoon, Pike, and Frack and Talos, GWC book club maven Casilda, and tech guru Juan Drew. Remember, if you'd like to share your opinions with the GWC crew and listeners, you can call us anytime at 214-296-9229, extension 701. You can also contact us via galacticwatercooler.com, our website and blog. But you should really spend some time over on the GWC forum. GWCers really are the friendliest people in sci-fi. And we're always rewatching or group reading something fun. You might even find a GWC meetup somewhere near you. GWC is funded by advertising and by listeners like you. For information on how you can donate, visit galacticwatercooler.com/support. Finally, special thanks to Ferris and his friends Encoder and Jim Minadeo for GWC's sweet theme music. For more Encoder, visit them at myspace.com/encoder.